This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, educated educators talking education.
Yes, it is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Swallowed a frog, I think, on his first classes in session. Johnny Lupinacci, Jess, what's happening, my friends?
Hey, it's great, man. I love this new format, listening to the homeroom, you know, getting feedback from you listeners. Hey, if you want to drop us a line or give us a question, or hey, like what we talk about today, you might want to comment on, give us a call, leave us a message at 608-557-8577. That's right, listener, even though we're not live, you got full energy. Educated educators talking education. Anytime you want to leave us a message, we'll hit that mailbag and we'll take your question or call in our shows. But Tim, this is a great Wednesday drop because, man, we've got an amazing guest.
We've got an amazing guest, amazing book. Michigan State's own Josh Cowan, his book out right now that is just flying around. He is everywhere too. The fact that we were able to schedule him, I don't know how we were able to do it, because he is at every bookstore somewhere in America. The Privateers, How Billionaires Created a Culture War and Sold School Vouchers. I mean, you get into this book and you read it, and it's just something I would encourage you listeners. You're going to love the interview when we get the opportunity to talk to Josh. But man, Johnny, when you look in here, whether it's the evidence that, well, the no evidence that, again, anybody listening to Busted Pencils knows we've been talking about vouchers and privatization, going like, look, the gig is up. There is no evidence to support vouchers. But man, what Josh does in this, Johnny.
Yeah, man, he lays it out. And so, you know, without any further ado, let's kick it right to this guy, because listener, you're going to learn a lot.
Professor of Education Policy at Michigan State University with extensive experience in evaluating state and local education programs, he was the founding director of the Education Policy Innovation Collaborative and has been widely published in scholarly journals, media outlets, and policy briefs. His new book, The Privateers, How Billionaires Created a Culture War and Sold School Vouchers, is out now. He's out on the road doing all kinds of tours, but we are so lucky to have him on Busted Pencils tonight. Josh Cowan, how are you, my friend?
I'm great. How are you guys? Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. So the book, right to it, The Privateers. Yeah. I'm going to throw in the question just with a little bit of a bio. So you're coming at this, just so for people know, you were essentially a proponent of vouchers in the day. And now you're not necessarily, when we look at this. I know that's oversimplifying it, but just to point out that you originally saw this as a potential academic gain for students in situations, or just clarify that and then we'll get into the book.
I was certainly open-minded to the idea that these things might work. I was probably a bit naive as to sort of some of the history behind these things. Others maybe we were onto it a little bit before I was, but certainly as a trained policy analyst, which was sort of my day job, and really remains that, it was my job then as a young researcher. It was my job as I made my way through the ranks of sort of research, academic research profession, to go into these situations with an open mind, see if these policies work, if so, for who, if not, why not? And that's kind of how I came into this debate, certainly, at least until roughly about a decade ago, when really the evidence turned pretty horrific.
Well, I think that's the part. It's the evidence. And you say you're a policy analyst looking at this and kind of coming at this. And finally, though, eventually saying, like, look, the evidence isn't there. When you're talking about the evidence, too, for most listeners of Busted Pencils, they know vouchers. They know privatization. Yeah. We've been talking about this, like you said, for ourselves for over 10 years for the podcast and the radio show. So I think the idea that you're coming on to say the evidence, but that really is for the one part of this to say is that, and this is to me is going to be the big talk that we want to kind of really highlight here, is that the argument for vouchers and privatization used to be based on, quote, an academic rhetoric of improvement. And now today, though, where you really take the book and take us to the end is that we're not even hiding behind the fact that this is has anything to do with academic achievement gains and helping kids and struggling schools. This has shifted into truly a culture war and, quote, parents' rights. But Josh, how did we get here?
Yeah. So great, great question. So vouchers began as an idea in 1955 when the conservative economist Milton Friedman first proposed them in the months actually following Brown v. Board. And there's some debate among historians about the extent to which Milton Friedman himself was saw his voucher scheme as a way to avoid the orders on the integration orders under Brown v. Board. But what isn't in question is that segregationists certainly leapt on the idea and tried to kind of create voucher schemes in the South as a way to avert Brown. They didn't really sort of take off in any sort of whole-scale way until the 1990s. The first modern voucher system was introduced in Milwaukee, small-scale, in 1990. And it really was at that time much more of a product of the moment that was in 1990, which was kind of this conservative push for market-driven reforms across the board, not just in education, use the market to improve social services. This was the era of changing welfare, social welfare, fighting against the first attempt to provide universal health care under the Clintons. So vouchers were very much part of that moment at the time. And there's some, you know, some mildly positive results. Kids who used vouchers from schools, public schools that had been under-resourced and were struggling academically, did see some modest improvements in their outcomes. But really, that lasted for a very brief period. The last positive study, the last study to show vouchers helped kids academically, is 22 years old. And on a very small scale. The last study to show that vouchers improved educational attainment, so high school graduation, is 11 years old now. Since vouchers have scaled up, and what we mean by that is sort of gone from a pilot or a demonstration phase, few hundred kids, few private schools, often decent, relatively advantaged private schools, to the scaled up versions statewide. The bigger and the more recent the voucher scheme, the worse the results have been over the last decade.
John, you pick up on that.
Yeah, this is a great conversation because, Tim, you know, we are often on the show talking about vouchers in the kind of current context without a lot of history for our listeners about this. And for sure, without a lot of policy analysis. And that's a key component to having, you know, an educated educators talking education conversation about this. So, Josh, appreciate your work, man. I want to dive into the privateers a bit. Just talk a little bit about, like, why this book, like how it came across your, you know, creative ideas as a scholar, like why go this direction with this book, The Privateers?
Well, it really is difficult to overstate just how bad and just how large the negative effects of vouchers were over the last decade. Now, roughly 70% of kids who used vouchers were already in private school to begin with. So it's really important to know that data point. Most voucher users already in private school to begin with has held up remarkably well in state after state after state that's pushed voucher schemes. And it first really appeared in the literature, the research literature, way back in 2007. But for the kids who do transfer from public to private school over the last decade in these larger programs that we've seen some of the largest negative impacts on student achievement that we've seen on any question in the research community whatsoever. And I'm somebody who grew up professionally in what was called the evidence-based movement in education, sort of bipartisan. This was the era of George W. Bush and Ted Kennedy coming together on the No Child Left Behind bill. Now, say what you will about that 22 years in, but it did prioritize transparency, accountability, and sort of this idea that if we were going to use public dollars in the education space, we were going to see how schools receiving those dollars performed. And that included vouchers back then. But since those horrific results have come out over the last decade, 24 states have passed voucher schemes, most of those in the last 2-3 years, passed or expanded voucher schemes. And all of those new programs are completely devoid of any type of new accountability, new evaluation, anything like that. And the reason for that is that, again, on the evidence, vouchers have really, really harmed academic outcomes for kids. We can talk a little bit about why that is. There's some very good reasons why these voucher schemes do cause that academic harm. But the important point that I made in the book, and this is sort of what I set out to do, is as a researcher, as someone who sort of believes in evidence, wants to use evidence to make policy better for kids and families, the voucher results should have stopped these schemes dead in their tracks at least no later than 2019, maybe even sooner than that. And yet they're flourishing, or they're, I wouldn't say they're flourishing, but they're expanding, they're spreading. And so the book sets out to ask, why is that? And the answer is that sort of the Trump presidency, the rise of Christian nationalism, really refueled and rescued the voucher push at a very dangerous time for that movement, as the evidence on academics was coming back in. The right sort of right wing turned to these culture wars to motivate and re-energize the voucher push. And that's where we are today.
In fact, that's the part too that really, really is something here that I think with your book that we really want to talk about specifically, you know, with the busted pencil listener. What you're saying, Josh, too, is that, yeah, this reignition, this new fervor of which vouchers and the push to privatization, and in fact, very much largely arguing too that there will be no data for comparison of any type of academic results in any of these new initiatives to put this forward. Not only is it not included, but it's actually policy driven that there won't be any type of an accountability scheme put together to that. And so as we're coming to this and looking at in this moment, 2024, we're in a presidential race. It's the fall with 2000 Project 25, all of these things coming forward. I almost wonder about the conversation about the evidence. And we think we need to make that great point is that, look, the evidence isn't there for academic achievement improvement. But now this twist and a turn for advocates like Busted Pencils, for anybody who's saying for public schools to really kind of grab hold and grab that faith in public education. How does this new push of elevating culture wars, to me, they use the culture wars as the reason to have vouchers. It's because I want to discriminate. I want to be a Christian nationalist. I don't want to know about democracy. I want to protect and preserve fascism. Damn it.
Well, you know, in the 50s, when these schemes were first proposed, you know, the argument was very overt that, I'll give you an example that I use in the book. So in Texas, Texas legislation that was created in the wake of Brown using Milton Friedman's idea, the legislation required actually that parents who wanted to use a voucher to attend private school had to sign an affidavit that sort of affirmed that they were using that voucher because of their dislike of racial integration. And it was specifically in the name of parents' rights. The phrase parents' rights kind of came up in that period of time. Parents had the right to keep their kids away from students of color in that time period. Now it's sort of a different argument, but the language is the same. It's focused on gender. It's focused on certain curricular materials that do associate with race. It's illegal, at least on paper, for private schools, whether publicly or privately funded, to overtly discriminate on the basis of race. But there are ways that sort of schools can, you know, when it comes to vouchers, the important thing for listeners to understand is that it's the school's choice. Schools do the picking. It's not the parents. It's not the kids. The voucher is only as good as the school that lets the kid into that school. The second point here too, with you mentioned Project 2025. So vouchers are two of the first three paragraphs in Project 2025's education agenda. So there's dismantle the U.S. Department of Ed, which is sort of code to conservatives that basically we're going to get rid of the most important anti-discrimination authority in the United States, at least when it comes to schools. We're going to get rid of that, followed by two paragraphs demanding universal vouchers regardless of income. In the foreword to Project 2025, President of the Heritage Foundation makes vouchers a litmus test for all presidential candidates, conservative-backed presidential candidates. Vouchers are also in the first two sentences of Trump's 47 education agenda. So these things are very much wrapped into today's sort of political argument more broadly. And they're packaged with really pretty overt calls against what they call gender ideology, woke, you know. So it is really important to understand today's voucher push and really the success the voucher lobby has had expanding these bills in the moment that we're in that's tied to all this other stuff, Project 2025, you know, crusades against so-called woke in public schools, book bans, restricting on what kids can read about race and gender and so on and so forth.
Yeah, Josh, this is so helpful, especially as our listeners right now, you know, they're asking questions about this presidential election, and we've talked about it, and, you know, it's been on the news and not talked about enough, but talked about, you know, in a sense that, you know, Project 2025 sets forth the possibility to, or the proposal to eliminate the Department of Education, you know? Yes. And so it's really helpful to hear from you, an expert, a researcher, you know, a guy who values evidence, like, here's kind of where we're at with vouchers. And here's why this is probably a bad idea. This plan moving forward is not a great idea. So Josh, like, thinking about things though, we want to strengthen our schools. I think the listener out there is in agreement. We want to strengthen our schools, and they're constantly being told, you know, that vouchers will strengthen schools. So I know you've debunked that myth in your book. I mean, you've shared enough information here on the show, but if you could kind of hammer it home for our listener, like, for, you know, them as they're in conversations with their neighbors who are saying, I don't know, I heard these voucher things are the solution. You know, what's a good, like arm them with a great response.
Well, first and foremost, vouchers will defund public schools and do defund public schools. They devastate student learning, and vouchers discriminate against vulnerable kids and families. Mm-hmm. Now, those three things are sort of, vouchers, again, defund public schools, devastate student learning, discriminate against vulnerable kids and families. That's what vouchers do. If it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. The other side's argument on this, the voucher lobby will say, just give everyone a coupon, mm-hmm. and let them sort between whatever schools they want. We don't have to encounter tough questions about race, tough questions about gender, tough questions about, you know, whatever. No, we don't have to have any of these conversations anymore. Just give everyone a coupon to go do what they want. Mm-hmm. It doesn't work that way. It didn't work that way in the 50s when they made that argument on the basis of racial, to keep racial segregation. It doesn't work today on other social issues. Again, we've talked about some of the reasons why. So private schools do the choosing. It's not really the parents. We talked about the fact that 70% of voucher users are already in private school to begin with. We've talked about the fact that for the kids who do switch, that 30% on the other side, their results suffer tremendously. The reason for that, by the way, is that vouchers mostly fund subprime private schools. What I mean by that is, you know, there are a lot of elite private schools out there. There are. They don't take vouchers. They don't mm-hmm. often take kids who really might need to transfer from public to private school or might want to. Very, very strong evidence that vouchers, you know, discriminate's a legally loaded word, but voucher schools avoid enrolling students with disabilities. Mm-hmm. Evidence from places like Arkansas, voucher schools requiring families to sign what they call sexual morality pledges. That's code for no LGBTQ kids, no right. LGBTQ families, right? We've had anecdotal evidence that, you know, your child of divorce, single mom, have a teenager that might become pregnant, as happens sometimes. You know, you're violating our school's honor code, you're out. So these things are happening in parts of the country where vouchers are coming. They're not solutions to educational inequality, and they avoid asking hard questions, which we still need to ask, about how do we make public schools more equitable, more accessible, more adequate for kids. It starts with funding. The evidence is very strong that investing in public schools does work for kids and families, does lead to community improvements across the board.
Right.
But we got to reject the snake oil salesman first, and that starts with rejecting vouchers.
We got to reject that, because Johnny's always laying into that too. The investment is there, and we know when we make the investment how that really does improve public schools. Josh, time flies so quickly when we're making these interviews. Before we get a chance, though, to really kind of end here, I got a quote from your epilogue here, and I'll just say it right here. This is from Josh. Although groups like multiple state affiliates of the American Association of School Administrators and the National School Boards Association, as well as the NEA and the AFT, have lined up squarely against school vouchers, there are few agreements about even how to counter the privatization push, much less alternatives when it comes to overlapping priorities, funding streams, and key personnel. There is no progressive or public school-based equivalent of the network that you describe in the book. That's that network of billionaires, Josh. I read that part, and Johnny, we have said this. It's like, where is our billionaire? Where is somebody who's going to elevate Josh Cowan and Busted Pencils into the sphere where you've got, I'm drawing a blank on his name, but how do we fight this billionaire network?
Hmm. I have a modest proposal, and that's let people decide, let voters decide, let actual parents, not billionaire backed parent astroturf groups decide. As it turns out, vouchers have actually never won a single statewide ballot initiative. What I mean by that is whenever they've been put to the vote and voucher lobby has tried send it to voters in the state, they've been soundly rejected. In my state, 65 to 35%. The voucher folks have been really heavily investing in, as it turns out, Republican primaries in state legislatures to pick off, because opposition to vouchers is bipartisan.
Right.
Rural Republicans hate these things. Mm-hmm. Right. And so what sort of Betsy DeVos's group, some of the Charles Koch groups have been doing is picking off vulnerable Republicans, not spending money on Democrats, Republicans, to build small legislative coalitions on the right wing to eke these things through, ram them through state legislatures, often through the dead of night. So if you take these things to the people, we got a couple on ballots now in Colorado, for example, in Kentucky. There's a bill in Nebraska to rescind the voucher law there that will require a direct vote of the people. I'm optimistic about those because, again, vouchers have never survived a direct vote by actual parents and voters. So we'll see what happens.
This is great stuff, Tim. I mean, Josh, thank you for your research, right? Providing evidence to what we like to call a scientific consensus around how we better make decisions to support democracy. So this is really important stuff. Check out Josh's book. Josh, before we wrap things up, can you let our listeners know where they can get more Josh Cowan work? Plug the book, let them know where to get it, because it's a great read, folks. We're deep in it. And, you know, even as experts, we're learning a lot. And like Josh said, it is incredibly helpful to having those bipartisan conversations that are crucial to the next stage of this country's democracy. Josh, plug your stuff, man.
Yeah, thank you for that. I mean, I am active, for better or worse, on social media. You can find me, Josh Cowan, MSU, across those various platforms. But start with the book. Start with The Privateers. I wrote the book. You know, there's a lot of myself in there, a lot of commentary, a lot of evidence, but there's also 562 footnotes, 40 pages of notes. You don't like what I have to say to write, go through those notes and read the evidence yourself.
There it is. So our guest, great author, the book, make sure you do go check it out. The Privateers, How Billionaires Created a Culture War and Sold School Vouchers. Josh Cowan with Johnny and I and Jess like to say thank you for busting pencils with us.
I appreciate you having me, guys.
Oh, that was a great one. Listener, if you have a question or you want to ask Josh something or just want to send Tim or Johnny a question or a comment, remember, you can leave us a message at 608-557-8577. And of course, keep listening to Busted Pencils.